Welcome to Dolphinville Radio, broadcasting live from the Kona Coast, Big Island, Hawaii. We have a great, beautiful, sunny day here. The whales are swimming. Dolphins are jumping. Welcome. Welcome to our experiment in time and space, as we broadcast these cyberwave frequencies, reaching out in joy and celebration. Welcome to a new bandwidth of informational flow. We're joining together to celebrate. Okay, we're back this week with Joan Ocean, sharing her time with us with some incredible information. In the last couple of weeks, as you know, we've had some really wonderful conversations with Joan. She's shared some remarkable stories for us, and we're looking forward to more of that as we share it this afternoon. I would hasten to say, though, this is being brought to you by our sponsors, Photon, photon.net, as in the Photon Belt, which we just entered into on December 2nd. All part of this harmonic convergence of time and space. The Photon Net is enjoying the Photon Belt. Photon Net is a internet service provider. And Randy at the controls here is being able to give us service. And we'll talk more about that as we get into the program. But first, I know you're all anxious to hear from Joan Ocean. And for those of you who have not been here these last two programs or for some reason have not been listening to the broadcast, I just wanted to bring you up to date on our wonderful guest, Joan Ocean. Joan, in 1978, first met a mentor for her, John C. Lilly, who's been known as the father of cetacean research and dolphin communication. She was very moved by this information that he shared with her, and she felt a connection with him and his extraterrestrial experiences that seemed to stimulate her eventual relationship with the dolphins. This began through meditation and expanded as a non-swimmer. Joan had connections with the dolphins. Then in 1984, she met Jean-Luc Bazzoli, visionary artist, and with him met a California gray whale who looked directly into her eyes and changed her life forever. She understood that cetaceans around the world are trying to communicate with us, and it's a gentle form of communication. It's a form of communication that uses sound holography, a language that intensifies physical senses, bypasses rational cognitive paradigms, and resonates directly with our cellular intelligence, and thus awakens multiple levels of perception and new understandings of consciousness within us. In 1984, Joan and Jean-Luc Bazzoli created the Dolphin Connection to explore the advancement of human consciousness and biophysics, spirituality, by producing their visionary films, books, art forms, and ocean seminars, which encourage people, friendship between people and ocean-swimming dolphins. She's regarded as an authority on dolphin telepathy, and she's invented and coined a phrase called participatory research, in which humans and cetacean species are equally conducting research with one another. And she shared her research at various gatherings and symposiums, the International Whale and Dolphin Conferences, the Prophets Conferences that have been held over the last 10 years or so. She's also been interviewed on CBS's 48 Hours, as well as the TBS, Tokyo Broadcasting Systems Television Network. And she's been the subject of many, many radio interviews, such as the Art Bell Show and others. Master of Science, Counseling Psychology, Joan is a psychologist, a shaman, a scientist who creates environments that support people in transition from one lifestyle, one dimension, and one physical form to another. She's the author of two books, and I would encourage you all to check out Joan's website at joanocean.com and learn more of what she has to share. And it's a real pleasure to have you back again. The evolution of human beings through gentle enlightenment and natural joy has been the center of your work for these past 27 years, Joan. So it's great to have you back again.
Thank you so much, Douglas. And thank you, Randy and Photon.net, It's really wonderful to be here again, and it is a beautiful sunny day. I'm happy to connect with everyone out there and tuning in. Thanks for tuning in to me. I'm picturing a lot of you. I see your faces. It's wonderful to reconnect this way. The whales are spouting and tail slapping. The other day I heard this tail slapping so loud I couldn't see the whale, but I could hear the sounds, and I'm so happy that they're back here, back home in Hawaii. And the dolphins, always so joyful, have been riding the body wave of the whales. They ride the whales the same way they ride the bows of the boat. And it's wonderful to see them. They're such a image of grace and physical strength and form as they fly through the air around the mighty whales. So it's beautiful here today, and I'm happy to be with you. And today, I'm very excited. I look forward to sharing with you some of my personal experiences with our ET friends. More and more, I'm thinking about the question, which is, if the ETs agreed to join us on planet Earth and live among us, what would our world look like? What would it feel like and be like for us? And how would our life change? What would be different? Anything? These seem like good questions to think about and contemplate. And so we'll be looking at these kinds of questions more and more in the upcoming weeks. Now, last week, on December 8th, I ended the evening by sharing a channeling from the whales called How the Whales Were Created on Earth. And it told about how the old ones, our creators, were spirits of pure love. They could create matter from empty space. They knew that subatomic particles responded to mental thoughts and feelings. The whales know how to create matter that is composed of thought energy that positively assists people. And they have asked us to work together with them to create a new world. What the whales can do, we can do also. And that's one of their greatest messages, a reminder. So everything we learn about them is a lesson about ourselves. Well, in September and October of this year, I received some very interesting messages from the ETs that also encouraged us to use our power and potentials. And, of course, especially the power of love and group thought or group intentions. So I'd like to read a little piece directly from what the ETs said. Quote, like billions of others in this galaxy, we are conscious beings that some name extraterrestrials, even though reality is subtler. There is no fundamental difference between you and us, save for the experience of certain stages of evolution. End quote. So no fundamental difference, not a big difference between us. At another point they said, quote, like most of you, we are in the quest of the Supreme Being. Therefore we are not gods or lesser gods, but virtually your equals in the cosmic civilizations. Physically we're somewhat different than you, but for most of us, we are humanoid-shaped. Our existence is a reality, although most of you do not perceive it as yet. We are consciences, just like you. You do not experience us because we remain invisible to your senses and your measuring instruments most of the time. We made a collective decision to make contact with you. But this is not enough. We need your decision also. We are sending you this message asking you to become the decision makers. You personally, to decide about whether or not we should show up. So this is what they're saying and telling us right now.
This is exciting information, really. And a lot of us have been sort of waiting for this for a very long period. Before we get in depth into what Joan is presenting here, I think some of you may recall last week's program dealt a lot with the whales, and the whales have shown to be a gateway experience. I would like to acknowledge that since our show last Monday on the 8th, on 12/12 of this year, perhaps the most famous whale known to us, Keiko the whale, who was best known as Willie in the movies Free Willy, did pass on to the happy whale hunting ground, so to speak. He's no longer on the physical plane. And as those of you who have followed the story for a number of years recognize that they tried to put him back into his home environment after 20 years of captivity, more than 20 years actually. He was 27 years old, which by captive standards is an older whale, but by living in the wilderness, one never knows. But I wanted to share just a real brief message about whale consciousness that came through in an email this week as part of a tribute to Willie and Keiko as we think about whales one last time before we turn our attention to this new topic now of what the whales are leading us. This is a message that was put out by White Eagle Medicine Wheel, American Indian, and somebody who is acknowledging the whales in such a way. He says, quote, "Natives say that whale is psychic and clairaudient, and able to pick up vibrational signals from many planetary bodies. Like whale, humans once communicated through vibration, energy patterns, and telepathy. Whale asks us to connect to our soul's history, our own book of life. Ancient knowledge is held within our cellular memory. It is time to learn who we really are and what path of service we chose many eons ago. Peace and emotional healing are whale's gift to us." And I think that's a tribute to Keiko. Thank you for bringing our awareness around to the whales and the dolphins. And thank you, Joan, for making us aware of our connection to these magnificent creatures. I know that it's always been a lead-up for you to get from the whales and dolphins to other levels of intelligence. And part of the gateway experience has been allowing us to hear these things. Are we ready? Is humanity's birth into the cosmic unity ready for us? And knowing you for these past years, there must have been a wonderful moment for you in knowing that they were ready now. And I guess the Earth was ready for this new frontier.
Right, yes. Thank you for sharing that beautiful message. Yes, it's true. When I heard this message from the ETs that they were ready and were we ready, I breathed a sigh of relief because it really felt as though I've been waiting for a long time for them to be ready to arrive on Earth, and I guess for Earth to be ready to receive them. And you know, it hasn't been easy because, as most of us know who have had an interest in this subject, often the movies, the betrayal of star beings in the movies, they betray them as dangerous aliens. And, of course, this is not how they are. And they have no intention of trying to take over the world or things like that that are depicted in films. That's kind of a three-dimensional Earth idea based on a current kind of militaristic view of the world. You know, we're very affected by military thinking on Earth. It's like, if you don't know what it is, well, put it in a box or shoot it or get rid of it. That's kind of the mentality. But the ETs don't operate that way. They don't think like that. So it seems that they are patiently waiting for Earth humanity to reach spiritual maturity and decide to join the United Planetary Coalition of our own galaxy and come together in peace. Many, many planets and stars are part of that United Galaxy Coalition, and Earth is just coming into it now. So I know that the ETs will not come unless a group of us ask them to assist us, to help us, and even to improve the political and environmental situation on Earth. So the ETs that I know and that I'm in contact with are very loving and kind. And from what they've told me and my experience of them, they have advanced spiritual technologies and, of course, advanced physics being many thousands of years ahead of us, and they will assist us if we'd like to be assisted on the earth. So it's up to us. Now, for me personally, I already told them yes, I would like them to come. I think a number of people have done that, and I've been receiving wonderful emails from people, and they just send me a great big yes. And so since I did do that, I am having a lot of contact with these star beings. I spend time now in their world, and it's a very peaceful, loving world of high frequencies, refined frequencies of light. And over again, they assist, and they're assisting me with health issues and some emotional family issues. Of course, spiritual work and answering any questions I might have and helping with healing and inspiration, really. So I consider them really good friends of mine.
Well, now hold on a minute. This sounds like a really great relationship that you have with the ETs, and it's certainly something that seems very comfortable. So let's back up. When did this start? Can you take us back to the beginning?
All right. Well, I was born in... No.
All right. Not that far.
Oh, okay. Well, it really is hard to know when it all started. You know, you think you know, and then as the years go on, you look back and you start to remember this, remember that, remember that. But I remember that back in 1978, I had my first contact with a really radiant light being named Arcturus.
Like the planet.
Yeah. He is connected with the planet, the system, the Arcturian system. And he revealed himself to me in a very vivid vision when I was in San Francisco. And that began a long friendship for me with Arcturus that included my writing. I just kept writing and writing. I had many, many notebooks filled with information. And a lot of it was about what was ahead for planet Earth and what was ahead for our evolving bodies that are transmuting. And also about why I was incarnated here. So that was then. I remember that. That stands out. And then I remember about 10 years later in 1988, I was living in Laguna Beach, California. And my partner, Jean-Luc, was a citizen of Australia at that time. And so we were traveling all the time between the United States and Australia and having a six-month visa in each country. And we often stopped in Hawaii en route between the two countries. And we used to share the slide presentation of Jean-Luc's visionary art show. And really, at that time, except for the dolphins in Jean-Luc's art, I hadn't met them in the ocean yet. I was meditating, and I was mostly in contact with the beings from Sirius. So at that time, all of a sudden, we received a phone call from a friend we had met at a presentation in Hawaii, and she offered us a little house on the beach to rent. And she said she wanted, like, quiet people to rent this house because it was next to her house, and Jean-Luc was an artist, and I'm a writer, and so she asked if we'd like to live there. Well, we really had never planned to live in Hawaii. You know, oh, no, we'll get island fever. You know, we'll be limited. We like to travel around. But we were ready to settle down, both of us, and for Jean-Luc to do his paintings and me to write my books. So we were deciding what to do, and then I received a channeled message, and it said, "If you move to Hawaii, you will meet the ETs in physical forms." Oh, boy. Well, that was all I had to hear. I've been looking for those elusive ETs for a long time, so I had only been meeting them in meditation. And then, you know, reading a few books about them and meeting some strange but kind of nice people. But now I was being given the opportunity to meet them in person. And so I said yes in 1988, and we moved to Hawaii, which really wasn't a difficult choice. And then, of course, who did I meet when I was in Hawaii but the dolphins? And eventually I did begin to realize that they are ETs, in that they don't live on land, they don't live on terra firma, so they are extraterrestrial. So I thought, well, this must be it. These are the physical ETs. And I was happy with that, but actually that was only part of what happened, because about 5 years later, I did meet some off-planet ETs who visited me at my home on Kealakekua Bay. And this happened in, it was around 1993. And I had received a message that the time had come and I'd be able to see and communicate with the ETs in the evening on a certain day. And then a friend of mine from England, I think I mentioned her before, Elaine Thompson, she was the one who facilitates sound healing. Well, she had received the same message. And when we found that out, then she came to Hawaii and spent time with me. And on the meeting day, we fasted and we remained really quiet and really aware and alert to everything going on. We weren't sure what would happen. So as the day went on, toward the evening, we went upstairs to my room just to have complete privacy. And we were sitting on the floor in front of the large sliding glass door overlooking the ocean. And then we began to meditate. And as soon as we felt ourselves immersed in love, then we asked, I think asking is really important, and so we asked that the contact be made. And we stated our wish to have physical contact, whatever that would mean, and made a request to board the visiting space vehicle and to retain conscious memory of it. Because sometimes it happens, but you forget. So we requested physical and spiritual healing and information about our direction or our purposes on Earth. So it wasn't long before we were aware of a presence, a very loving and powerful field of energy around us. And we then opened our eyes and we saw tall beings in robes standing near us. And we felt the presence of, it felt like something very calm, calm wisdom. And we felt love. These beings were very radiant. Their faces were so radiant that you couldn't really make out the features on the face. But the field of energy was very strong and it enveloped us. And again, we felt love.
Did she feel the same?
Yeah, Elaine did too. We didn't talk about it, of course, then, but later we discussed it, and I wrote about it in my book, and she wrote about it in a book that she wrote too. And we had the same experiences. So then we found ourselves gently floating up and out of the door, the sliding door, to a large ship that was hovering out there. And when we were on the ship, we were both given a complete tour. Well, I don't know if it was complete, but anyway, we were given a tour and saw many things. And a lot of this is written up in my second book, Dolphins into the Future, where I describe this experience. But some of the things we saw were things like a vibrational bubble compartment to align energy fields. It's kind of like a comfortable big chair with kind of transparent bubble around it. And you would sit in there. And then there were these coated rejuvenation chips to insert in sockets in the walls of the ship. And the docking hangars where the scout ships would come in and out. And these scout ships could change size instantaneously as needed. They could come in and be very small in the ship's hangar. And then they could go out around the earth and become very large if need be. There was a nursery and gardens and time travel incubation area. And we saw up above us, there were huge screens that revealed the inner topography of the earth. And also the energy fields of the earth, or kind of the earth's aura, was shining there. Beautiful colors. And let's see. Oh, there was a playroom, like for if you wanted to remain in spirit form, and the spirits were just playing and they were having a good time. As best I could tell. And then there were some technologies there that I couldn't really interpret. But have you ever been on one of these traveling cities? Any of you out there? Well, you probably have. You may not remember it, but maybe you do. And they really are huge. And they have everything you'd want for comfort and efficiency and beauty. They're just beautiful. They're just stunning to look at.
Well, your description is beautiful, and it's incredible that you had a friend to witness. You could kind of compare stories. What do they say? Wherever two are gathered, perhaps that means even more, the witnessing together, that you can make something even more real to both of your memories. And the spirit realm being very accessible, as you say, spirits playing there, it kind of indicates that these kinds of responses are multidimensional in aspect, that they're not tied to any of the 3D things that we would think, that we would relate to. And the traveling of these ships is really through a state of consciousness. And we can access these consciousness points, as you pointed out in the last two shows, through remote viewing, through focused intention. And a lot of the communication from the whales and dolphins have trained us, allowed us to listen to these aspects. I don't know if I recall myself being on board ship. I know I've had some dreams where I've woken up and I've said, wait a minute, I was someplace. But like dreams, so often it faded very quickly, and I wasn't able to hold on to it because I didn't have anybody to share that experience with. So maybe that's why it went away so rapidly. But it's really quite remarkable. I know that you've had some encounters with people who've actually been taken up in the ships more than Elaine. Wasn't Kinsley Jarrett one of those folks that you were talking about? Quite a fascinating story.
Oh, yeah, Kinsley. Yeah, he lives in Australia. He's a wonderful person. He's kind of an elderly, white-haired man, and he's in contact with nature spirits. He looks like a leprechaun himself. He's got these rosy cheeks, and he's just always smiling and joyful. And he lives really very quietly with his wife in a wooded area. He's not aware of any, you know, kind of New Age things or other people's books or ideas, but he just gets this feeling every so often in his solar plexus. And then he knows that this is a signal to get his drawing pad and his colored pencils and go into the woods. And so he goes into the woods and he's walking along, and then he just gets his feeling where to stop and sit down on a log. And he just sits there quietly and waits. And then in a short time, the nature spirits begin to reveal themselves to him. And they're like, they're invisible, and then all of a sudden they become visible and he can see them. And they wait, and they even pose, like they'll hold still so he can draw them. And great detail, you know, he'll draw their little ears and their pointy caps and the shoes they're wearing, and sometimes their clothes are kind of tattered, and he has all these drawings, and he showed them to me. Their nature spirits, elves, and even Pan came one time to interact with them, and then they also give him, like, messages that he writes up their messages. So on this day, when I went to visit him in his house, he was all excited, and he said he had contact with a new being. It was different than the nature spirits. And he told me, he said, and guess what, Joan? And I said, what? You know, he said, they told me that they're not from this planet. So he was very surprised to hear this because he'd never heard of that before. And so he told me that these were very loving beings. And he named them, he called them the Golden Ones. So although he met them in this customary way of just going out, and there was this feeling he responded to, and he drew their picture, he talked with them, and then he agreed to return on the following days to meet with them. And he agreed to be there every day at 2 o'clock, meet with them, and he agreed to let them take some cell and skin samples for their research for his body. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, he said, oh, yeah, they needed to do some research, and I said, sure, you know. So only with an Australian accent. So interestingly, he showed me his drawing then of this ET being, his Golden Ones as he was calling it. It was done on a large pad of newsprint. It was almost like life-sized. And the picture showed a being with a large head, indicating a large brain, right? Large dark eyes and a very small mouth, just a little slit. And so I looked at that and I thought, ooh, this looks like what we would call the Greys. But it was different. I looked at it and it was very different because he had seen them as gold and he had colored them all in as beautiful golden beings. And their eyes, they were large, but they were warm and brown, and they had this great gentleness shining out of them. It was like deer's, the eyes of deer. They were very soft and tender. And it was a really good lesson for me because I realized that my friend Kinsley and his open-hearted, loving way, he met these beings with this trust and honesty and openness, and they reflected back his perceptions, and they truly are loving and beautiful beings. So he had no ulterior motives or hidden agendas or anything like that, or that the ETs are this or that. He just put out, you know, with trust and love for them, and that's what he received. So the ETs have often said that the power of our minds is very important. And you know, do I have a minute? I wanted to share a little message here that the whales said about the ETs.
Oh, yeah, please do.
Okay, because I was kind of asking the whales about, you know, how we create things, how we can create our reality and all. And so then they came in. They said, you may ask, what about extraterrestrial visitors? Are they also created by us? And then the whale said, the ETs exist intrinsically to themselves, and yet they are modified by your perception of them. In the same way that you create the world, the grass, the stars, and the trees, you also create these beings. You draw them here to the earth. It is important for you to interpret these beings in a friendly way, and to know them as they truly are, citizens of the universe. You really do have control here, and if you start to interpret them as unfriendly, you will create an enemy for yourself. Remember to know all beings as friends, and friends they will become. In the near future, humans will have to face the truth that in some areas of awareness, they are not the masters of this planet. For some people who are still human-centered, this will come as an enormous shock. But it is a shock that must inevitably be experienced when you discover that you are not the highest life form in the universe.
Wow. That's something that gives us all something to pause about. And speaking of pauses, we're going to take a little brief pause right now and listen to some of the music of Andrew Forrest from beautiful CD Alpha Omega. We'll be back with you in just a few. Hang in there. Consciousness. All questions become unimportant when we learn from the deep, deep consciousness of the whales to just be, submerged in total peace in our heart and our soul, a state of grace and total oneness. And we're sitting here in this oneness talking with Joan Ocean. She's sharing some of these incredible experiences of the whales and the ETs. Joan has just recently opened a new website that's called etfriends.com, and it's recounting a lot of these stories and provides just a ton of information. There's an entire section that deals with some of the images that she has come across through some of her friends who are artists. We were talking about one of these friends, Kinsley Jarrett from Australia, and his extraordinary drawings depicting not only the nature spirits but the ETs. So maybe you can share some more of Kinsley's stories, because it sounds fascinating, this guy.
Yes, it is. And he has wonderful drawings, and some of them he faxed to me, and so I just put them on the website, and they're just in black and white. His color ones are actually beautiful. But here's the part with the story he told me where the dolphins came in, because I hadn't heard of this before, although I had kind of suspected it. And he said that he did go up on the ship with the golden ones when they invited him. And within the ship, he was amazed to find there were gigantic pools of water on the ship, and that there were dolphins in them, swimming in them. And from what he depicts in his pictures on the website there, the dolphins were sending beams of light into some kind of like glass-looking lenses on the wall or containers on the wall, and seemed to be transmitting some information about their time on Earth. And in another picture, the dolphins look like they're receiving energy beams that are directed into the pool where they are. So the dolphins, he wasn't sure. He said they may even have been the race that was controlling and regulating the ships coming and going. Maybe that's what they were doing with their transmission, with their sonar. But he wasn't sure, because he said there were also some humanoid-type people in the craft. And the ship went beneath the surface of the ocean. And down there you could see, and in his picture it shows, the walls of the ship were see-through, and outside of it you could see great whales encircling the ship. So they seem to be involved in some way in the work of this ship also.
The whales are connected to the ETs, along with the dolphins, exchanging information. Fascinating. I know there's lots of stories about the ETs and the oceans. After all, it is the majority of our planet is ocean, and we know less about the oceans than we do about outer space. So it would make sense that it's very possible that they could be in and out of the ocean. What other kinds of things have you heard about the ETs and the oceans?
Well, I think that John Lilly, Dr. Lilly, was really aware of this as well. And I guess for quite a while I've known that there are visitors or residents from civilizations beyond Earth or in other realities living within our seas. And the dolphins and whales have really made this clear to me over the years. And in addition, on occasion, I've personally witnessed UFOs entering and departing from the ocean. I've seen the ship go down, like I'll be looking out at the horizon, and it's transparent, it seems, the outer wall of it, at least at that moment it is. So you can see right through it, and you're seeing ocean, you're seeing the clouds behind it, but it's going slowly down into the ocean, and at some point the sun seems to reflect off the side, and that's really what caught my attention. I said, well, what is that? And I looked more carefully, like, you know, you go kind of with soft eyes and you could see it, and you could see there was this huge ship slowly going down into the ocean. And it really only makes sense, because an advanced civilization that has vehicles that are capable of deep space travel will certainly be able to operate underwater. Both conditions require completely self-contained systems aboard the vehicles. And so for many beings, I think if they prefer to observe us and assist us without being seen for now, they would use the ocean for their base. And I was thinking about that the oceans and the seas, you know, the water, cover about 3/4 of the surface of the globe. I think the number is about 71%. So they have a large area to travel around in. And as humans, we're just kind of beginning to explore the reefs and other things that are on the ocean floor. But the ETs, with their advanced technology, have been using the ocean as their home base for a long, long time. And it seems from there they can measure levels of spiritual, physical progress on Earth and electromagnetic waves and chemical permutations in the water and nuclear energy on the planet. And so now, living here in Hawaii, my own experiences of seeing beams of bright light coming up from the ocean floor. And also, we sometimes see, and the captains of the boats have seen this too, and they're wondering what this is about. They see pods of dolphins who are unfamiliar to us, and that they have none of the familiar markings that I've documented over the years. They seem to be coming up from these beams of light and from these beam ships to swim in the Hawaiian waters. And now in our seminars, we go to these places in the ocean here along the coast, and we go there to swim. But, you know, it's time for this information to come out, because the dolphins and whales, they're not trying to keep it a secret.
Well, what do you think that they're doing with the ships if they're going in and out?
Well, I do ask them about that, of course, and they say that one of the things is they're taking the kind of the vibrational temperature of planet Earth. You know, learning about the vibrational frequencies of the Earth. And you can pick that up well in the oceans. The frequencies travel much faster in the ocean than in the air. And they're also monitoring radiation from the center of the Earth. So they can read the frequency of the Earth, and traveling in the oceans of the world, relay that data to the ships. And also information like about the health of the oceans, the spiritual awareness of the life forms on Earth, something we kind of talked about last week, that as we increase our own vibrational frequency, the frequency of the entire planet changes. So they monitor that, things like the activity of volcanoes and earthquakes, power centers, and the emotional and mental biorhythms of the planet. So they're kind of busy out there. You know, we always want them to just play with us, but and I guess they're multitasking. So they can do it all. But I think it's interesting also to think about that they may not just be ships just sitting on the bottom of the ocean, that they may actually go deeper than that. They may go deeper than the bottom of the ocean. Consider that there's a huge amount of water beneath our surface, like beneath the crust of the Earth, and even under the ocean. So it makes you wonder, like, are there lakes and rivers within the Earth, within the deep, deep Earth? Something that Admiral Byrd referred to when he did his explorations at the poles. So it's interesting to open your mind to that possibility. And you know how when you an idea comes in and you know that it came like from the dolphins and whales or the ETs, and you go, where did that idea come from? And then you get something to corroborate it, so it helps you to understand it better. And so I read a press release recently, and it was actually dated March 7th, 2002, and it was about Japanese researchers at the Tokyo Institute of Technology. And interestingly, they stated that they conducted experiments in their labs that indicate there may be more water, H2O, deep underground, more underground than in all surface oceans, lakes, and rivers combined. In fact, they thought there's 5 to 10 times as much water in the Earth than on the surface. So that's a lot of water, and that's all water that the dolphins and whales can navigate, and the ships too. So this truly makes us a water planet.
I've often thought of us as planet ocean. We so vainly say planet Earth, but really there's so little solid matter on this planet. And almost a reflection of our bodies as well, because our bodies are comprised mostly of water. And so like little planetoids, water may be the organic fabric that represents the planetary consciousness on the physical plane of existence. We are water beings living on a water planet. And there seems to be like a water consciousness, if you will, a Gaia consciousness that itself is a beacon to the rest of the universe. And we as beings working with those hydrogen and oxygen molecules are actually providing a fundamental link as an assembly of these source elements to connect ourselves as energy vehicles to the divine universal life forces, I think. What we're going through as a planetary consciousness right now is a stage of healing this programmed illusion of separateness from ourselves as self-contained solid things. We're not solid, folks. We're really liquid in our consciousness, and we're learning to float free within this new atmosphere of understanding. I know you mentioned the witnesses of these excursions in and out of the ocean many times, and maybe you could say a little bit more about some of these experiences. I know that we've had some incredible encounters together, but you've been all over the world.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Every time you talk, I get more ideas of things I want to share, like when you talk about us being liquid. I'll have to pull it out. The whales have a wonderful message about how we are fluid and how important it is to go through the world as fluid beings. It's really beautiful. But, yeah, I would like to share with people some of the recorded incidents of UFO sightings, and just a few of them. Of course, with my interest in this, I researched this a lot. Now, here's one that was recorded on June 18th in 1845. This was in the Malta Times, and of course, Malta is the group of islands in the Mediterranean south of Sicily. I think it was a British colony until the 1960s. And so there's a ship out there in the Mediterranean, the Brigantine Victoria, some 900 miles east of Idalia, a town, when her crew saw three luminous bodies emerge from the sea into the air. And the report says they were visible for 10 minutes, flying a half mile only from the ship. And other witnesses saw the same three ships from land, from the islands, from Syria, and from Malta. And the luminous bodies each displayed an apparent diameter larger than the size of the full moon. So that was one interesting one, and there's a lot more written about that. And then another old one was in March of 1870. Now realize that good old Orville and Wilbur Wright, they didn't even invent the airplanes until, well, the first aircraft that went into the air was in 1903 and 1906, the Kitty Hawk. So this is in 1870. There was nothing in the sky then. And this was in the Atlantic Ocean. The sailors on a boat called Lady of the Lake, it was an English corvette boat, saw a curious object advancing against the wind, as they said. That's what caught their attention, because instead of going with the wind, it was going against the wind. They thought, what could that be up there in the sky? And this form was visible for an hour, according to Captain Banner. He wrote this in the ship's log, and he drew a picture of it, and when you see the picture, it looks exactly like a flying saucer.
I think Jules Verne was writing his futuristic stories at that time, too. Captain Nemo flying his airship and also being able to go beneath the ocean. I wonder where those ideas came from.
Oh, yeah. Somebody was in touch back then.
Definitely. Jules Verne seemed like he was in
touch. Oh, yeah. I have some of his DVDs. You know, they've made them into DVDs now so you can look at them. So, yeah, there are thousands of these reported sightings, and many of them have pictures as well. And in all different places, you know, and there seems to be bases off the coast of different countries, because these are, I'm talking in particular about sightings of ships coming up from the ocean. And so places like in Puerto Rico and under the North Sea and Scotland and Argentina and the Azores Islands, Portugal, Spain, the Dominican Republic where I go, and Spitsbergen in Norway, there was a UFO that crashed there. So many reports of bases underwater. One case that was really documented, there's a book that 400 pages long about written by a Dutch international businessman, and he was contacted by these ETs near Amsterdam, and they told him that they came from a place called Iargo, and it was 11 light years from our sun as we calculate distance. And they were observing us from underwater. and they allowed this man to visit the spacecraft in its underwater location. And he writes all about it. This is a very well-documented case, filling more than 400 pages. And the book, if you wanted to get it, is called UFO Contact from Planet Iarga. It's I-A-R-G-A. So that was in 1967. And then more recently, we have different people now, the military, coming forward to tell the truth about experiences they've had. There's a Commander Graham Bethune, who's retired from the U.S. Navy, and he tells the story of flying his military plane from Iceland to Newfoundland, and this was in 1951, and he saw a UFO coming out of the water. He said he was about 300 miles from Newfoundland when he saw this, and quoting him, he says, "We saw a glow on the water, like approaching a city at night. As we approached this glow, it turned to a huge circle of white lights on the water. And then we saw a yellow halo, small, much smaller than whatever it was launched from. It was 15 miles away." He continues to explain that this UFO approached his plane and flew alongside of it, and all of the people on the plane saw it. "We could see the craft. It had a dome shape, and we could see the corona discharge from it." So he is one of many military witnesses that came forward at the National Press Club in Washington in May of 2001. Another person was Dan Willis, who's also in the Navy, and he worked in the code room of the communications station in San Francisco. And while he was there, this priority message, classified as secret, from a military ship near Alaska came. And he says the ship reported that they saw emerging out of the ocean near their port bow a brightly glowing reddish-orange elliptical object approximately 70 feet in diameter. 70 feet! That's really big! It shot out of the water, traveling at about 700 miles per hour. And not only did everyone on the ship see it, but this was tracked on ship's radar and substantiated. So it seems that the dolphins and whales are doing their best to try to make us aware of the oceans and who lives there, bringing us into the oceans and encouraging us to open our minds to that. Maybe people would like to hear the titles of some of the books. People want to look into this further. There's many documented cases. There's one book entitled UFO Contact from Undersea. And you can look these up on Amazon.net. That one was published in 1982. Another one is entitled Underwater and Underground Bases. That just came out in 2001, and I can give you more details on the authors if you need that. And then there's a book I really like that I enjoy reading. It took me a while to get it because I think it's out of print, but you know the way they'll search around for you on Amazon, and then somebody had it and sold it to me, and it's got this long title. It's called Invisible Residents, A Disquisition Upon Certain Matters Maritime, and The Possibility of Intelligent Life Under the Waters of This Earth.
Sounds like a very serious book.
It's so interesting. And it's by Ivan Sanderson, and it was published in 1970. So I have all these books myself, and they're really good.
Well, I know there's been a lot of information. I think just last week the cable network Sci-Fi Channel had a special about the military having the UFOs land on a beach in their base in England, and it was really quite fascinating. So more and more of this information is coming out all over. We've had some interesting encounters here on Hawaii, and I know that you've had several incidences. There was one in particular that we shared on a boat where what looked like a big ship was there, and tornadoes and whirligigs and vortexes were opening, and it was really pretty amazing story. Remember that?
I know. I'll never forget that. And neither will all the people that were on the boat that day.
I won't.
That was amazing because, you know, I have to say, the dolphins, the whales, the ETs, they're all so great. You know, they're so willing to be there for us. And so I have a seminar, I call it Dolphins, Whales, and ETs, and boy, they all show up, so I'm very grateful for that. So this was during that workshop in Kona, and it was a number of years ago, although we do this one every year and have amazing sightings, but we were in the water, we were, you know, on a regular boat, and we were swimming with the spinner dolphins. And while I was out there in the water, I looked up, and there above us was one of these big, you know, it was a gray lenticular cloud, as they're called, just hovering above us. So I was right away interested in that because my Arcturian friends, Arcturus, had told me that their fifth dimensional spacecraft is similar in consistency and density to our beautiful cloud formations. You know, and that dimension, in the fifth dimension, it's a very much more refined field of energy, so it's like clouds to us. So as I directed the attention of the group to the clouds, and we all looked up and we felt this great field of energy swirling around us, it was coming from the cloud. So the dolphins swimming nearby began spinning and leaping out of the water. It's like they were reacting to it, and all of a sudden, to our surprise, a humpback whale came to the surface and breached way up out of the water. And when the captain of the boat saw that, he right away called the swimmers out of the water, of course, because in Hawaii you're not allowed to be in the water with the humpbacks. So we boarded the boat, and as we did, we looked and we saw this baby whale began to breach over and over again. You know, and they do that sometimes. They'll just breach for the joy of it. And it looked like the two whales were trying to fly out of the water and on up. So soon we were in the midst of these leaping dolphins and leaping whales, and the energy above started to become more forceful as this gray elliptical cloud hovered directly above us. And we just stood mesmerized, really. We were just looking at it, and I thought, oh my gosh, it's like in Cocoon. You know, we're going to go up now. I'm ready. So, and then all of a sudden, just to add to all that, this huge water spout appeared. And it was on the starboard side, and it was just taking the water right up, swirling round and round and round in a vortex. And really, in all my experiences before and since, I have never seen that. Now, maybe other people have, but I have never seen anything like that. And it was swirling in a spiral and lifting water from the surface of the ocean right into the air, creating a whirlwind. So we had to actually hold on to the boat for support because it was rocking the boat. And then another water spout formed on the other side of the boat, and then a third one in front of us. And it seemed like now the ship above us, the cloud ship, was descending toward us. This was amazing.
Well,
yes. The wind started increasing. It was getting so intense, and we were holding on, and we do have some footage of this, and you can see, like, our clothes, everything's being whipped around, and our hair is in our eyes, and this huge wind. So the captain then of the boat, not realizing this was an ET workshop after all, he was concerned about this sudden wind and spiraling water. And so,
his boat.
Yeah, and his boat, I guess. And so he said, let's get out of here. And so he started up the engine and turned the boat away. And Penny was there with me. And so Penny and I, we continued to watch the ship above us and started to communicate with it. And, you know, it was a dolphin whale and ET seminar, and they had come to say hello, you know. And I guess they have to be a little careful when they come in that close, but it was interesting. We, of course, kept watching as our boat pulled away down the coast heading south, and then we noticed a gray military airplane, a converted Boeing 707, was circling repeatedly beneath the cloud-covered ship. And this was really our last view as the boat left the area. So we have some of that on video.
I know Jean-Luc Bozzoli was out on the ship that day doing the video, and it was pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. The air becomes electric oftentimes in a stormy situation like that. And we were all, I think we were almost ready to say yes. Some of us were ready to say yes anyway, but not everybody. So we had to sort of back off a little bit. I know that there's more stories that you're going to share with us here. Would like to take a little bit of a break at the top of the hour. Remind everybody that this is Dolphinville Radio. And we're coming to you courtesy of photon.net. Randy, our operator, is at the helm. And he's going to bring us into the top of the hour with some more music of Andrew Forrest from his album, The Alchemy. So we'll be back in just a bit. Dolphinville is coming back on the air. Andrew Forrest from his new album called Alchemy. Well, we are approaching the all-knowingness as a radiant light that changes and expands our consciousness. These are some of the adventures and experiences that Joan Ocean has been sharing with us. I would encourage anybody who's got some questions. We've received some of the questions over the internet. There is a live internet connection for the email called broadcast@dolphinville.com. That'll get your questions in here. We'll try to get some of those probably in about 30 minutes' time. Joan's still got quite a bit of information here. She's got files and files. In fact, she told me once that instead of writing her new book, she just couldn't wait. That's why she's allowing this information to go out at this rate as it's coming in. And this is as new as it gets. This is the information that Joan is sharing. And she's doing it for Dolphinville.com. Dolphinville really kind of represents a cyber community of people who both live here and are part of our global awareness, a network of light that we're sharing with other people and this information. And the people who've been called here to enjoy this new sensibility as it's unfolding as part of this human experiment on planet Gaia and the Gaia consciousness. I know that we've had lots of experiences together on the water. Joan came back 1 year from her trip to the Dominican Republic, where she was swimming with the whales down there. And with wide-eyed wonderment, she described an event of one evening as they were looking out on the ship. Really quite a remarkable thing. And my first question after hearing it was, well, didn't anybody have a camera? Because nobody thought of it. What happened on that one, Joan?
I know. Well, as you know, every year we go to the island of the Dominican Republic to live on a boat for 2-3 weeks at a time to be with the humpback whales in this location where they're mating and birthing. And it's wonderful to live on a boat like that, and there's no land around. You can look in all directions, and all you see is ocean. And yet it's not really deep there, at least in this area where the whales are. It's only about 60 feet deep, and the whales do tend to like shallow water for giving birth. So I really wasn't thinking of ETs that much, because I always think they're down deep, deep in the ocean, but this is a shallow place. But we certainly are aware of the stars there, because the stars are so bright and beautiful where there's no lights around, and they just come right down to you and shining on you on the boat itself. So it was evening. We'd been swimming with the whales all day. It was after 9 at night, nice and dark. And there were about 15 people on the deck of this big catamaran. And we had been meditating, and then we were just talking quietly. And everyone was feeling relaxed and fulfilled and a little tired. And so little by little at that hour, people began to kind of wander away to go to bed and go down to their sleeping quarters and to rest up to have another day tomorrow. And soon there were only, like, I think it was 3 women that were left up on the deck and under the stars. And I even had gone down to bed, and I was in my cabin. And then I heard this, like, commotion. It was this noise out in the lower part of the boat. And so I opened my door to see what was going on. And someone was calling loudly and waking everyone up, all those who had fallen asleep, and saying, "Everyone, everyone, you have to see this. Come on up. Come on the deck. Look at this. You have to see this." So you didn't have to ask me twice. I just ran out of my room, and doors opened all along the hallway, and we hurried up the flight of the stairs to the deck, and there we saw it. It was amazing. It was a huge ship that filled at least a fifth of the night sky. It was so big, you had to look from the left to the right to see it. It was monstrous. And around its center, in the middle of it, it had a belt of lights. And I don't know if the inner part was moving or the lights were moving, but we had the feeling of motion in place, that it was holding in place and turning. And as this turning happened, we saw different light patterns on its side. And at first it seemed like a line of lights all around it. And then when it turned again, lights took on the shape like the eye of Taurus, some going up and some going down. And everyone, we found out later, had different impressions of the appearance, but we all agreed that it was miles big, and it was oval-shaped. And it was domed-shaped above and dome-shaped below, and black with rows of lights. Well, the feeling there was so powerful, we were just speechless. And we tuned in and really knew that there were space beings on that vehicle. And they weren't really there for us. Oh, darn. They were really communicating with the humpback whales. And, of course, the whales and the ETs know each other very well, and it's a normal interaction for them in that location. It's a good place for the ship to come in because there's no land. They can't interfere with any of the electrical systems in mainland any place. And so it's an ideal spot. So we all watched the ship as it remained there for 2 hours. It was about 2 hours. And then for some reason, we became really sleepy. And little by little, we slowly drifted off to our individual beds. Well, in the morning, as you can imagine, it was the discussion of the day. We had one fellow there whose father had won the Nobel Prize in physics, and he was having a hard time with this vision. He says, "Not the Milky Way. It's not an airplane. He couldn't figure out what it was." And he kept questioning all of us and having us draw pictures and tell what we saw. And it was good, actually. He took a lot of reports from everyone. So the captain and crew, meanwhile, that night they had gotten up too and had seen it too, and they had called the two other boats that were moored in our area, and the people on those boats had observed the ship too. And actually, the captains had said they had seen it here before. So that is really what made me decide to go to the Dominican Republic year after year. That was the first year there. And, of course, I loved the whales and wanted to be with them, but it was the mystery of the unknown, the mystical world out there that I wanted to experience.
Well, there seems to be more and more witnesses, as you may say, stepping forward these days and actually, you know, announcing their experiences. Now, about 10 years ago, you met with a researcher by the name of Dr. Stephen Greer. And Stephen was convinced, even though he was a medical doctor, he was convinced that there were some things going on, that that we were being denied information by our military. And so he set upon trying to dig into these this source of information. And lo and behold, about 2 years ago, Dr. Greer held a press conference at the National Press Club, you mentioned a little bit earlier, and he announced what he called the Disclosure Project. And the whole idea behind that was to bring forward some of these witnesses, people who had been in high positions with the military and who up until this time had been sworn to secrecy for fear of losing their positions, their pensions, and maybe even more, we don't know. But at this stage in their life, they felt that they wanted this story to come out, much the same way as we've heard some of the stories coming out about Roswell and some of the other incidences. And I know during that press conference, which was in May of 2 years ago, there was something like 20 people stood up, and they represented just the tip of an iceberg, some 500 military, government, and corporate personnel who have said that they're prepared to tell the truth regarding the ET presence on Earth. They're ready to testify before Congress regarding the 50-plus years of human involvement with the aliens that they know about. These credible witnesses are now sharing their own personal experiences with the public at large. They've gone around to various presentations, and Dr. Greer has put together videos detailing this as part of the Disclosure Project. They're available on his website. Dr. Greer's site is called thedisclosureproject.org. And I know that you've had some experiences. You've actually gone and done some field work with Dr. Greer, isn't that correct?
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. And let me just say his website is actually www.disclosureproject.org. Yeah. And I also sell that video, if anyone can't get through there, video of these military people speaking about their firsthand experiences. So, yeah, I was trying to remember how I first met Stephen. He, of course, convenes groups to make contact with ETs. And so he's multi-level. He's doing many things besides working with the military in a very credible way and presenting information that everyone can relate to. He also takes groups off into places where there have been known sightings of ETs and asks them to come and contact us. And so we decided to co-lead a seminar here. He came to the Big Island, and we went way up on a mountain to make contact with the ETs. And then during the day, we also had chances to swim with the dolphins. And he is well aware that the dolphins and whales are star beings that are living in the oceans of planet Earth. And one of the things I enjoyed so much was to see him when he was out on the boat, and the dolphins showed up in the way they do all around the bow of the boat. And he got so excited. He was like a little kid. He was running back and forth on the boat looking at every dolphin he could see. And then finally it was time to go in the water. The dolphins were waiting for us. He went in the water. And he's quite athletic. He jogs regularly and he's in good health, mostly. And he went in the water, and five dolphins right away just took him. They took him away, and he was swimming fast with them, and they stayed with him, and they just swam and swam and swam with him, and that those five just focused on him. And it warmed my heart to see that, because he's a hard worker, and here he was having a chance to play. And when he got back on the boat, his whole face was beaming. I mean, I still remember to this day he was so happy. So he is a really wonderful person doing amazing work, certainly working on alternatives to the fossil fuel problem right now and coming up with really many wonderful alternatives that really work, and that's going to help change the planet for the better. I was reading a description of him by a friend of mine, Dr. Richard Boylan. Dr. Boylan is a wonderful man who convenes the Star Kids, the Star Children. And he lives in California and has conferences where all the Star Children come together and meet each other. So, of course, as things happen, we're all kind of drawn together. And so Richard Boylan described Dr. Greer this way. He says he convenes groups to reach out in friendship to the ETs. He expresses the importance of regular citizens with no covert agenda, representing the best of humanity in making contact with the star visitors. Stephen is in contact with the highest levels of leadership in government, and he says that very few of them are briefed about extraterrestrials. Many of these leaders have only the same knowledge available to us, to the general public. The full knowledge is closely held by a cabal of self-serving industrial, intelligence, and military officers who want to keep for themselves the ET technology for their personal benefit and use. So Dr. Greer recommends the use of psychic techniques such as astral travel and remote viewing and out-of-body experiences to reach out to the ETs and be in their presence. And he points out that these altered states of consciousness are based on advanced principles of zero-point physics. So it's all coming together again, the new science, the metaphysics, it's one and the same. What I call quantum cosmology. And an important point that Stephen Greer also points out is that some of the extraterrestrials visiting us are interdimensional beings, not just beings from another planet. So I had the great opportunity to go with Stephen on some of his contact experiences. And one of the ones I really enjoyed was at Joshua Tree National Park. That's a beautiful place anyway.
Very mystical just in and of itself.
Yeah, exactly. And we were there. We'd go there like about 8:30 at night, and our cavalcade of cars would all pull up in a line, and we'd park them someplace, and then we'd sit in a circle and meditate and call in the ETs. So this is, of course, called Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind. And the fifth kind, it means that we are initiating it. You know, it's not something that's happening to us. We're asking them to make contact. So Stephen said a really nice meditation. He does TM, Transcendental Meditation. And then we all began to go into this beautiful space. And we felt like we were sitting in this rarefied field of tingling energy. It was all around us. And, of course, the beauty of the desert there adding to it. And we'd been calling in the ETs to meet us as Earth's emissaries, that we were here to extend our friendship to them.
He has a whole protocol for this, does he not?
Yeah, he kind of does it the same way. And it's good, because when you go there, you kind of sink into that. It's kind of like keeping your crystals in a circle or something. It creates a field of energy by doing this the same way. So we felt this really strong energy, and so at that point Stephen suggested that we all stand up and then hold hands and make a line and walk toward the place where the energy seemed to be the strongest. So he knew that there was a ship nearby. There'd been a lot of unusual things going, like a loud noise, and a tall tree near us, like, bent all the way down to the ground and popped back up again. You know, it didn't break or didn't get damaged. So we held hands, and we formed this line, and we began to walk slowly toward this field of energy. And it was getting more and more powerful as we walked toward it. And
were you scared?
No, not at all. I was excited. I really wasn't scared. I thought, finally, you know, at last. So I felt my body vibrating, though. It was really vibrating the closer I was going toward this invisible field there. But my body was vibrating so much, and I began to shake more and more as we were getting close to this place of the unseen ship. So I knew I wasn't cold or I wasn't nervous, and yet I was shaking, and I was concerned that I might disturb the people, like I was holding hands with people on both sides of me. I thought, oh, maybe that's going to bother them. So I have to control this shaking. So what I did was I began to meditate. And so I visualized this golden light coming down, you know, from above me, going into my crown chakra at the top of my head. And I just felt it moving all through my body and down through my feet and into the earth. And this golden light came in so strong that I actually seemed to go into some kind of an altered state at that point by doing that. And I think it was that combination of the golden ray and the close proximity of the ship. So in this very relaxed state, we now had stopped walking and we were right there. And my eyes were kind of half closed and I wasn't shaking anymore. And my entire body was feeling very light and airy. And then I saw it. I saw this ship so clearly, and it was right there. It was like only about 30 feet above the ground.
Did it just blink into your vision?
Oh, my gosh. It was like I didn't see it, and then I saw it. And it was so beautiful. It was this like electric blue color, a color I actually have been searching around. I can never find a color that is the same as it is. It was oval, and it was hovering above the ground, and we stood facing it. We were holding hands, and there was like this radiant white light coming out from under it. And the ship, it was like there were no seams in it. It's that same thing I've seen before where it's this beautiful construction out of some kind of a translucent material that I've never seen any place on Earth.
I've heard the term plasma ship when referring to some of the saucers. Would you characterize it as like a plasma?
I'm not sure what that is, really, the plasma.
Well, plasma, like as in blood, it's an organic material.
Oh.
It's a transparent but yet solid, almost organic living ship.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, it felt like it was pulsing, and I know some of them definitely are organic, you know, that they operate through the voice messages of the pilots of the ships, and that they are the outside of the ship is organic, related to the skin of the ETs within the ship. This one, though, I don't think it was that. This one seemed different. It seemed like something that had been constructed in this very electric, metallic blue. And it was just breathtaking.
But it wasn't metallic. It was some other material, huh?
I don't know. It was shining. And, you know.
Was it a luminescent kind of radiance that you were seeing?
Yeah, it was. It was. I felt that if we got right next to it, we could probably see our reflection in it. You know. But I can see it so clearly right now as I talk about it. And that's what's so interesting, what happens. Because when you have this experience, when you talk about it to anyone, you see it. And it reminds me of creating an acoustic image. You know, like the dolphins do when they're swimming, they'll send a sound and zap, you get the whole picture of what they're sending right in your mind or your entire body. And when I have contact with the ETs like that, I feel like I can talk about it and somehow the words I'm sending out can send out the image and people seem to feel it anyway, at least get the feeling of it. It never really goes away from my mind.
Mm-hmm. That's the holographic imagery that you've spoken about that the dolphins actually shared with you and brought you into the future.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, here we are now standing there in the presence of this. And I have the feeling other people may not be seeing it, you know. So it was a real feeling place. You know, I was just feeling so much love. It was beautiful. And so I had a person who was from the Big Island who was attending this gathering with me. And they were on my right side, and we were holding hands, and there was 22 people there all together. And I didn't want to take my eyes off this beautiful ship. I just wanted to keep looking at it. But I somehow wanted him to know that it was there. And I was trying to think of a way to let him know you know, what to do. And so I kept saying the words, squint, squint. Because I thought that maybe if he made his eyes go soft or made them smaller, you know, because it's a different way of looking. If you're looking real hard to see something, mm-hmm. lots of times you're only going to see the physical matter reality. Mm-hmm. So you had to look a different way. So that was all I could say. And, of course, later he said, why did you keep yelling squint at me?
Was he seeing anything?
No, he didn't. But other people did. Some people mm-hmm. did. So, you know, I just, as I said, was hoping that he would kind of soften his eyes and come into a relaxed meditation so he could see the vehicle also.
Remember years ago they had those yeah. special squiggly books that you'd look at a squiggly page and it would turn into a three-dimensional image if you stared long enough at them.
Oh,
so in a way it's sort of like shifting your perspective so that you can see between the lines.
Yeah, it is like that. Because, again, that was such an important lesson for me that as three-dimensional human beings, we have to change our way of looking and of seeing, you know, and somehow to go soft or to get into meditation and see it in that way, because this ship was there. It was big and real as the yucca trees all around us, you know, the yucca trees, and yet, you know, a lot of people didn't see it. And then the other part of it was really that it didn't matter to me if no one else saw it. You know, like when you have an experience like that, your values and ideas of what life is all about just changes, you know, instantaneously. I mean, it really knocks your reality, you know, whoa, reality check. So I knew I had seen it. I knew it was real. I knew it was there. And it was sending its loving energy field to everyone there. And yet, as so often happens, I had no need to prove it or to even talk about it. So it was really a deep communication for me that occurred on a level of contact that goes way beyond verbal or mental, you know. And once you experience that ship and you merge with its field of energy, then everything else on your mind kind of slips away and you're just feeling at peace and feeling fulfilled.
I see how things connect up with the way your experiences have lined up with first the dolphins and then the whales, taking you to an even deeper level. Some of your experiences that you described with the whales even last week about activating whole brain consciousness, about using consciousness as a way to traverse into different dimensions of reality or different dimensions of awareness. And just to be with that vibrational frequency, which is something that was so overwhelming when you first saw the sperm whales, and yet you learned to relax and accept that just to be present with it was enough. It's really amazing. That knowingness enables us to communicate with all levels of sentient races. And it's a matter of allowing and letting go. And it seems like you've been in this giant rehearsal for all of these 20-odd years, first with the meditations, then with the dolphins and whales, and then gradually preparing you for this most sublime of experiences. And you're there now helping others to experience the same thing. Really quite commemorative. Thank you, Joan, for doing that.
And you know, as you're talking, I'm thinking of another thing that, like I mentioned before, from these contacts, it grew to really be in contact with nature and with animals and things like that. And one of the things I think I'm being taught a lot is about patience. I'm very impatient. I don't like to be patient at all. Maybe I don't really need to learn it. Maybe impatience is okay. But anyway, I think in a lot of cases, patience is good. And I remember it was just a couple of months ago on my ranch, at Sky Ranch, and I have, as you know, three baby donkeys and a miniature horse, and I just love them. They're so gentle and so sweet, and they kind of follow me all around, you know, and I enjoy that. So, and one day, these wild horses came down from the hills. They don't come that often close to the fence, but I think my little miniature horse, they had sensed she was there, and they had come. And so they came down, and they were with the donkeys and the horse against the fence. Well, I love horses. I love them so much. And I wanted to see these wild horses. But I knew that if I just walked right up, they would run. They would take off, and I'd never see them. So patience, oh my. So I did have my camera, and I started to walk toward them from far away, moving toward them, and they were grazing, and then all of a sudden they'd all stop and look up at me. And the minute they did that, I'd stop and I'd look down at the ground and not move. And I could tell out of the corner of my eye they were still watching me. And finally, they'd feel relaxed and comfortable. They'd put their head back down. They'd be grazing again. Then I'd slowly walk a few more steps, a few more. They'd look up and look. I'd stop, you know. This went on and on. It was taking me forever to get there because I could only take a few steps, you know. But it really worked. And it was like, you know, merging with what was right for them, you know, the way horses interact with each other, like becoming a horse, a new horse approaching a herd, and how would they receive me? And I was able to get closer and closer and closer. And then when I was only about maybe 15 feet away from the fence and still having my head down and looking at the ground and making believe I'm just a tree or something standing there, then the baby horse came over to me, my little La Plume is her name. And she came next to me, and she walked with me and walked me over to them. And as long as she was with me, they didn't run away. And this huge stallion put his head over the fence at me, and I was able to reach up and touch him. Not right away. I just made eye contact and did what I've learned to do from the native people, and that is to softly blow my air, my breath, into the nostrils of the horse. And his nostrils got big, and he took them in, and then he back at me, and I breathed that in, if you can believe it. And we became friends, you know.
Joan, the horse whisperer.
Oh, I wish. Wouldn't that be fun?
Mm-hmm. Well,
but
it seems like
anyway,
it's true.
I thought of that story because it is so important to be in the space of the beings that you're with to make contact.
Well, we're coming up on the last half hour of the show. We're going to take a little bit of a breather here. And I know that we want to answer some questions that have been out there, put out to us. So I'll give you the address one more time. It's emails can be sent live here to broadcast@dolphinville.com. Right now, we're going to listen to the music of Tony Salvage from his album Pele's Heart. Tony's got a new album coming out. He'll be at Borders Bookstore in Hilo this 15th. Signing albums and playing his incredible violin. So let's enjoy a little bit of Tony. We'll come back, answer some questions, and wrap up the show for this week. See you in a few. Andy Barris, the president and founder of Photon.net, for hosting the show, giving us the broad bandwidth to get the signal out across the planet. And it's really been an opportunity to share some of this intimate information that people who know Joan may have an opportunity to have in person. She does do a number of gatherings at her home here on the Big Island of Hawaii. And she has this beautiful place that sits up into the foothills, about 2,300 feet over the ocean, and watching the sun go down every evening when it's there available from her wonderful home at Sky Ranch. I know, Joan, you do things at Sky Ranch. I've had some experiences up there, and you do encourage the ETs to come through at that magnificent place.
I really enjoy being there, and as many of you know, I spend a lot of time in a big tent that I erected for myself. I have a bedroom in the house, I really do, but I like being outside under the stars as much as possible. So we'll be gathering to contact the ETs both on the 22nd of this month at the ranch, because we gather the 22nd of every month for ET contact. And then in January, there's a seminar called Sky Ranch and Star Beings. And that will be a week-long seminar at Sky Ranch. And there we're going to gather to contact the ETs, and really using a very refined stream of energy that's available to us in that sacred place. You know, the sacred Hawaiian ohia trees are all around. And also, it is that point that Douglas mentions at 19.5 degrees north latitude, energy upwelling point for planet Earth. So as we gather, of course, we have mutual intentions all to make contact and to enter this realm. And then we also access the gateway that's there, or the portal that was really opened in August. And we've used that portal before, and it's very available for contact and for continual use at the ranch. So, and for those who come and who are aware of what that feels like, we begin to feel an energy around us. It's kind of like a floating energy. It feels very soft, and yet it's also thick. It's like being in an extremely thick cloud. It's palpable. And it's very quiet, and it's swirling right into our bodies. It's as though we have no boundaries. And it makes us feel very light, and it's very relaxing. It feels peaceful. And again, we have that tingling sensation. It feels almost like we're levitating. I know sometimes I look down to see if my feet are off the ground, and we feel a lot of love. So all of these sensations are part of the changes that we are experiencing now in this alternate reality. And it's a very beautiful place that soon we will reside in all the time. And we're learning, like the dolphins and whales, to use all the hemispheres of our brain to live in left hemisphere and right and do it all. We don't have to choose one or the other. So this place of dreamy awareness, in which you become the observer, is the pathway to the parallel worlds that exist side by side with our three-dimensional plane, and are really infusing into our plane now as we call upon it. So this is where we go to meet the ETs. It's this feeling, this place, and it resides deep within us. So I think that we have some questions that people have called in.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, you've kind of answered a lot of the questions just by some of the commentary, the physical appearance and what you feel when the dolphins are around. There was one really kind of an extensive verification of a sighting that came through from one of the listeners. Debbie from Pittsburgh wrote about an experience that she had a couple of years ago with her daughter, in which they saw a transparent ship over their neighborhood. She describes how they were in the car, and she slammed on the brakes, and she saw this triangular or U-shaped object in the sky that was very clear for them. It was three-dimensional, very, very large, and she wanted to get out of the car, but her daughter was so frightened that she didn't allow that to happen. And she goes on to say that 2 days later, when she was clearing the dinner table, her vision started to get these gray spots. And it was like the television set that had a picture fading in and out, she describes. Soon, she says, a bright neon green tube appeared on both sides of her peripheral, and the vision on peripheral vision. And this electric current that ran up and down the tube from the bottom to the very, every 30 seconds or so. It lasted for almost 30 minutes, she describes. She says, I know that this had to do with a ship in some way, and it was something that she was asking you if you had any thoughts and if you've ever heard of something like this before. And also, a few weeks later, after that incident, they were on the Big Island snorkeling with the spinner dolphins, and the dolphins came right up to her in her sleep time, very often, as the ships do now. So she wanted to just bring that up and ask your opinion of that experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very interesting. Thanks for sending that in. We are experiencing many things now. I've sometimes thought it would be interesting to have people phone in or write in some of the unique experiences they're having. As we go through these changes, and certainly after we have contact with the ships, even if we're inside our car or viewing them from a distance, they are still affecting us, and they affect our physical and subtle bodies. So we are transforming right now. That was some of the information, actually, that the beings, the nine from Sirius, told me way back in the 70s, that our bodies would change form and change shape. And I didn't really understand it then, but I think that is happening. And we often hear about the changes occurring in the DNA. And that is happening, and more strands of the DNA being activated, and they're actually finding proof of that now in the laboratories. So this sounds like an experience of some of your system being activated. Perhaps something that had been dormant is now being activated, part of your transformation. The green tubes appearing and electric current could really be working with your electrical, bioelectrical system in your body and helping to activate it. I think things like this happen, but not always do people see it. So perhaps you have the ability of clairvoyance or being able to see things also, which is wonderful. And what came into me just as I was hearing your question was phase shifting. So I don't know if phase shifting means anything to you, but it seems as we are sometimes in transition going from a three-dimensional reality to fourth and fifth, we will experience some of these unusual images coming in and out as we're making transition. Listening to what you wrote, it made me think of a very unusual experience I had back in the 70s, and I'm still not exactly sure what it was, except I think that I, as a friend of the ETs for many, many years, I think that I agreed to have a little, what would you call it, a sensor put into my body so that they could locate me at any time. In the earlier years, that was important because there were a lot of electrical systems, electromagnetic waves that were interfering with contact, and also the ships were not coming in that close back then. And so I had a device within me that was placed there by myself, another aspect of myself, or with my permission. And this one time, it started beeping. Now, this sounds really unusual, but you shared your story, so I'm going to share mine too. And it sounded like it was in my ear, in my head, this beeping noise. And it sounds kind of like a truck backing up, beep, 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 beep. And every 45 minutes, this beeping would occur. And as it turned out, I was to meet a man who worked for McDonnell Douglas, and I was to meet him at the Monterey Airport, and I didn't know who he was or what he looked like, and I had some information to share with him. And so the beeping continued, and I went to the airport because I was leaving Big Sur, California that day, and I sat waiting until my plane was completely filled, and the beeping continued, and then when everyone was on, I walked down the aisle of the plane. And when I got to the person that I was supposed to meet, who I didn't know, then the beeping began, and I knew, okay, this is where I have to sit down. So I sat down, met this person. His name was John Gardner. He was an engineer with McDonnell Douglas in Washington, D.C., and gave him the spiritual information that was important for his contact, continuing contact with the ETs. So even for me, with some level of awareness, I found that beeping very odd. So it's just to say, you may experience things you cannot always explain, but know that it is something loving and it's okay what's happening. And it's good to talk about it, because I think even by my sharing this, other people may come out and say, well, I've had an experience like that too.
Well, we know now there's many examples of people who realized and have actually brought out what they call transplants, or not transplants, but implants. And you know, those kinds of stories seem to be more and more prevalent. And we're learning, as you've learned, that to accept that it's not always the worst case scenario that people want to think. It's been passed on as some kind of dark, scary story. I know also that some of the information that's been passed throughout the people interested in this subject, and beyond what television has presented us with network stories and cleared by certain authorities, there are stories on the internet that we see all of the time, people channeling information about the dolphins and the whales. And one of the things that keeps reoccurring, and it reflects one of the questions that somebody asked here about the whales and dolphins, and it seems that some people feel that the whales and dolphins are getting ready to leave this planetary sphere. What have you heard about that, and can you share anything?
Yes, I have heard people say that, and people ask me that question quite often in seminars. There have been some stories that the dolphins and whales are planning to leave, and it's certainly based on good thinking, reasonable thinking, because in some ways some of the species are becoming extinct, some of the species on planet Earth. It's interesting that in the United States, again, the humpback whales are on the endangered species list because they were endangered. Their numbers had diminished so drastically. And they actually had to change their behavior because they told me they are not leaving this planet. They will not allow themselves to be killed off, and that they are not victims. They are in control of what's going on. And what they started doing, and they're doing this in the Atlantic and the Pacific, is whereas they used to mate one season and then give birth the next season, and then when the baby was a year old, a year later, they would mate again and then give birth the next season again. Instead, they began giving birth and then mating the same season and giving birth the next season and mating again, so that their numbers have increased very, very much. And so they have told me that it's not their time to leave the planet yet. And actually, I think where some of the information is coming from is that, in a way, we're all planning to ascend. It's not just the dolphins and whales, it's the human race, too. And we're going to go together. And we'll all be here together until that time comes. And then, yes, you could call it leaving the planet, or you could just say we're going to create a higher dimensional planet and be in that world together and no longer be on the old three-dimensional Earth.
Well, I like that description a lot, and I've had my intuition has also said something to that effect. As we shift in our understanding and our vibrational frequencies start to all go higher, we can start to see ourselves differently on the planet. So the dolphins and whales seem to have been helping us and helping us to graduate to another level of thinking. And that level of thinking is allowing in these new ways of dealing with ourselves. It was shown to me that the dolphins and whales actually have been stewards of this planet, holding a certain kind of consciousness in place, like light grids, and that what they're willing to do, and they're now offering us the opportunity of taking over those lines of light grids, because that's really our lot, something they've been holding in place for us for however many thousands of years that we've been incapable of tuning into that and saying, okay, this is what you can do. This is what you're capable of doing, and we hope that you're able to do it so we can move on to do other things.
Yes.
Because they're ready to move up.
you've
just handed me a teaching from the Cherokee of his grandchildren about life. And
yes.
It's a beautiful statement here, because he said to them, a fight is going on inside of me. It's a terrible fight, and it is between two wolves. One wolf is evil. He is fear, anger, envy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride, competition, superiority, and ego. The other wolf is good. He's joy, peace, love, hope, sharing, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, friendship, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. This same fight is going on inside of you, he says, and inside every other person too. His grandchildren thought about this a minute, and then one of the children asked him, "Which wolf will win, grandfather?" The old Cherokee replied softly, "The one you feed." So thanks for letting me read that, Joan. You'd like maybe to share a few closing comments before we wrap up the show here for this week?
Oh, yeah, it's that time already. My. Well, I just wanted to say for my closing words that, as you know, we are preparing to make contact with the ETs over the air while we are on this radio broadcast. And we will be choosing a date, and then together, all of us around the world, will enter a deep state of meditation and experience together the presence of the ET ships. And it is a very subtle and yet powerful field of light that you will feel when we do this as a group. So we will continue to meet with you on Monday evenings, and we will let you know when we're going to do this. The date will be a Monday evening in January. And all of these broadcasts before it are preparing us for that experience. The stories I tell, the information I share, is to kind of give you a little background of what mine has been that's led me to this day. So these radio broadcasts that we're doing here are supplying information for our minds and our hearts so that we can proceed with certainty and with enthusiasm to meet our ET friends. So please stay tuned over the holidays to hear when we will make contact as one unit. And remember that if you do miss any of these informational broadcasts, they are on the Dolphinville website, and you can listen to them and even record them. You know, if you want to put a little tape recorder next to it, and you can record them anytime that you choose and then share them with people. And next week, on Monday again, on the 22nd, we'll talk about how being with the dolphins and whales prepares us for the star beings. So thank you all very much for riding with me on this wonderful starship. I love you all. Thanks a lot.
Joan, it's always a pleasure to hear your clear, clear voice ringing out over the waves. And I want to, you know, just express my gratitude once again. I know the upcoming shows are going to be very, very interesting as we lead to this. And the background information that you're sharing is, I think, vitally important for everybody who's seeking some new level of truth that we can all recognize and begin to share with one another. I know I'm excited about where we're going with this and the idea that we can possibly reach out and share this information with a global audience is really amazing. It wouldn't be possible if it wasn't for Randy Barris and the people at photon.net, who, as I mentioned before, have been very generous in giving us this broadband capability. And Randy has just asked that people who are interested in conscious communication on the Internet, go ahead and check out photon.net. They're an Internet service provider. They have been for, since 1996, and they're highly, highly professionals that give you a whole wide range of Internet services, from dial-up networking to web hosting and a host of other types of services. If you feel so drawn to getting a new connection or maybe a website through Photon, Randy said that he's giving people a special to sign up this month during this holiday season of giving and receiving. All you got to do is mention the code word Joan Ocean, and he'll give you a free month of hosting a website or Internet dial-up service. So thank you again, Randy, and also want to extend my gratitude to the artist who we've featured today. Very briefly, Tony Salvage, virtuoso from Big Island here. His violin sounds like whales in the deeps. Also, Andrew Forrest, who's a fine musician composer living in New Zealand, has offered us to play his work. And quite naturally, also, I'd like to thank Raphael and Katera for their sharing the calling as part of the theme music for Dolphinville. I think the calling is one of my favorite sounds to play on the ocean, particularly when the dolphins and whales are playing with us. It is whale season. I'd like to extend a hearty hello from our brothers in the ocean and extend it out to everybody on the planet, letting them know that we are connecting up here through these cyber waves. And you're certainly welcome to become a member of Dolphinville.com. Just go to Dolphinville.com and sign up at the membership. It's free. You can also enjoy some of the benefits of being a member, which include live chat rooms and forum discussions, as well as the Dolphin Divination Cards. So if you feel like it, please join us as part of the membership of Dolphinville. Again, thank you, Joan. Thank you, Randy. And thank you, listeners. This is Douglas Western, also known as Dolphin-S. And I'm just extending to you the same kind of greeting and salutation the dolphin said to me, which is be well and swim free. I look forward to being with you again next week. The equinox is with us now. The winter equinox, December. Excuse me. It is the solstice, December 22nd. Thank you. See you next week.